Well, I started doing stand-up in at the end of the stand-up boom, maybe you could say, in the 80s.
This is Matt Besser.
So that is what I first got into, and I'd always been into sketch too, but stand-up was really happening, and that's what I started doing. And then I went to Chicago, which is kind of the center of sketch and definitely improv at that time.
Matt Besser is one of the founding members of UCB, a place known for their improv.
But I didn't know what improv was, and I'd seen, obviously, sketch and stand-up my whole life, but the improv was nothing I'd ever heard of or seen before. And then I saw it, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe they were making up stuff on the spot. This was something that was kind of blowing my mind and me realizing this is something I could be good at. It kind of helped when I saw it. I saw people like Farley and Tim Meadows and Dave Koechner and just really funny people doing it. So I just felt like I'm more of a guy who wants to do comedy with other people to play off someone.
Welcome to the CISO C Show. I'm Andrew Steven. For most people, when they think of improv, they think of the TV show Whose Line Is It Anyway? And that's something that a lot of improvisers have struggled with. Because while that can be fun and entertaining in its own right, improv can be so much more. It's a theme I talk about with Matt Besser, one of the founding members of the Upright Citizens Brigade, as well as some other special guests along the way. Besser and I met in the newest location for UCB, UCB Sunset in Los Angeles, and in his office and throughout the entire building is this eclectic and strange but ultimately beautiful collection of artwork that I found out it's actually a curated collection of his father's. And not to get too deep too soon, but I think that serves as a great analogy for what the UCB is. It's this strange eclectic mix of people that come together to form something bigger than themselves. But we'll get back to that later.
When we were starting out, I had a video camera, and this is back when the only way to edit was to go from a VHS to another VHS in the most clunky, crazy way possible. But we would make these really rudimentary videos back then that were almost like silent film kind of stuff, because it had to be kind of simple, like me riding a bike and getting cut off by a car and then wrecking my bike and then me following the car and then the owner of the car parks and then I take a shit on their car. And that's just it. Basically with punk rock music under it. A Revenge by Black Flag. But that was always something we wanted to incorporate into our shows, was how to use this very rudimentary way to display videos. Like, that was kind of a new concept of, oh, play a video in the middle of your sketch show. Like, now it's very, it's like, of course you do it. Then it was like, oh, we would have to literally bring a TV up, a big old clunky, heavy TV up on stage and plug the VCR in and play the video. So right away it was, let's be the next kids in the hall. And I met Adam McKay right away and Matt Walsh, Ian Roberts, all these people, and that was what we would talk about.
Speaking of Adam McKay, he just, you know, won that Oscar.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable seeing that.
Did you ever think back then, you know, I mean, you recognize his talent, but did you ever think anything like that was possible when you guys were starting out together?
If you'd asked me then, is he talented enough to do anything, I'd say yes. But Oscar is not something that comedians even think about, really. Yeah. I don't think so. Even more so on, like, the directing side. So that makes it even more unbelievable. But if anyone could do it, I think, I don't think I know, everyone saw his talent.
Negative Paramount for taking a risk on a movie that's about financial esoterica and believing in it. Thank you to my beautiful wife, Shira Piven. There she is. And my children, Lily Rose, my two daughters, Lily Rose and Pearl, I love you so much.
Are you a comedy fan? If so, you have this man to thank for developing countless comedians and comic actors over the years.
The voice you're hearing right now is Brian Stack, and if you're unfamiliar with his work, he was the head writer for Conan for a long time, and just moved to New York to be the head writer for Stephen Colbert on The Late Show. But this is him back in 1986, when he shot and edited a profile of Del Close.
He was a big influence on such comedians as John Belushi and Bill Murray. His name is Del Close.
Del Close was breaking ground on what long-form improv should be. We're doing this documentary. We're about to debut this documentary at South by Southwest called Thank You, Del, The History of the Del Close Marathon. And the Del Close Marathon, of course, is our tribute to him that we put on once a year because he is, a lot of people don't know how big a deal he was to so many comedians' development. And so it was kind of our way of, in a way, bragging and saying, hey, this is what we've been able to do, but please know that it's all because of these tools that this guy Del Close gave us.
Whenever I hear people talk about Del Close, they always speak in this weird reverence about how great of a teacher he was, how great of a comedic mind he was. And I tried asking Matt Besser several times what he thought about his influence on comedy today. I mean, just in starting the UCB, if you turn on the TV on any given night, whether it's on a sitcom or on late night doing stand-up or in movies, not to mention Saturday Night Live and all the various other sketch programs, all these people have studied or gone through the UCB or touched the UCB in some way. But Besser was so quick to throw it back to Del Close and just say, hey, we're just continuing what he started.
Let's not kid ourselves. We just polished this thing that this other guy started. And it's too bad he didn't get to live to see it get this far. And it's going to go further, too.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
This is comedian John Roy. So you just wrote this article for Splitsider called Why Stand-Ups Should Embrace, Not Revile Improv. And you start it with a quote that says, I hate improv. And this is something you've heard from a lot of stand-up comedians?
Oh, sure. Yeah, you'll hear it a lot. You know, just once improv comes up, especially, you know, if there's, you know, an improv group on a festival or something, there's always one or two comics that'll be like, oh, improv. It's just one of the prejudices you get used to.
Yeah. And why do you think that is?
Well, you know, as the article said, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons. I know certainly in the scene that I came out of, which was Chicago, a lot of it was just sort of kind of jealousy from the stand-up scene at that point that improv got all the attention in Chicago. But I know that's a very localized explanation. I think Matt Besser said it best when he said that some stand-ups think of improv as having the energy of a Christian young life group, you know, kind of wide-eyed jazz hands bouncing around the stage, hippie kind of
fake kind
of thing, you know? Yeah. And I think that sort of turns off a lot of the sort of more cynical, stand-up loner mentality of like, oh, look at that group of people basically having a group hug up there. And, you know, I think that's sort of like a more personal, visceral reaction.
Yeah.
But I know it's out there.
Yeah. When I talked with Besser earlier, he mentioned when he first saw improv, it sort of lit a spark because he's like, oh, I get to do comedy with other funny people and we can make each other better. Do you think there's any sort of jealousy that comes from stand-up when you're just doing it by yourself, or is there something else?
I think the jealousy is more that the improvisers are part of this big scene that all seem to support themselves. And so you'll watch an improv team kill a room full of other improvisers that all came out to the show and sort of know what to expect. And, you know, if you go see a show at Improv Olympic in Chicago, you'll find people applauding like a choice they made.
Yeah.
But you have to know improv really well to go, oh, look, they upped the status and they flipped that guy into low status. And now they're, you know, like there's all these real kind of inside baseball things that an improv audience is sort of trained, literally trained, because they went through the program to see and to recognize. And there really isn't anything like that in a stand-up audience. And I feel like stand-ups are like, why do you guys get to go out into this sort of bubble world of happy fellow improvisers who know what you're doing up there and kind of applaud it? And we're out there, you know, hoping these drunks are, you know, conscious enough to understand what my sentence was. I don't know how fair that is, but I bet you, you know, on any typical night, I think there's a kind of feeling in a stand-up's mind that improvisers are performing for this kind of hometown crowd, you know?
Yeah. And now you went through improv a little bit too, as well as doing stand-up.
I did all of Second City. I did all of Annoyance. And then I was about halfway through level two of Improv Olympic when stand-up started to not only pay me money, but keep me out of Chicago on Saturdays and Sundays, where you kind of need to be to take the classes. So I got out of improv more out of necessity rather than something I wanted to do. It's just not really something I could fit into my schedule at that point anymore. But since then, I've come back to it. I've done improvised shows in the stand-up environment all the time. I think that might be also some of the jealousies that stand-ups are like, hey, I'm improvising up here. Nobody gives me credit for that.
Yeah.
And they feel like that, like the improv audience, because they know it's made up, are going to be more generous towards whether something should get a laugh or not. Yeah, I think it really is kind of based in insecurity, which is something stand-ups have a secure amount of.
Really, anyone performing, I think that's part of the reason we get up on stage, is because we need people to validate us. But that's a whole nother podcast and a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting too, because you hear a lot of stand-ups who talk about writing from stage, and that is improv to a certain degree. So like, what are some ways that you have seen improv and that training help you as a stand-up?
Well, you know, if somebody is laughing at something, my instinct is like, let's keep giving it to them. So, you know, when you're on a riff, like I used to have a bit in my act about ramen noodles that you can probably still hear today on XM radio. They play it quite a bit. But, you know, when that bit began, it had three punchlines, and you can see two of them on Craig Ferguson. But that's all I had. But people kept laughing, so I would just keep talking. And I would use the things I learned in improv that, you know, I've got the game of the scene already, as they taught me in Annoyance, that, you know, I'm frustrated by eating these ramen noodles because I'm broke. So I just kept going on that until by the time I recorded my album in 2008, the bit had about 14 punchlines from starting with two. And that's all just because I kept improvising on stage when it was going well. And I think I do that a lot when an audience seems to like something more than what I have prepared. I'll just go. And a lot of times that is really expanded bits from, you know, real almost a one-liner into something I can talk about for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, which in stand-up is the most valuable commodity you can have.
What's something that improvisers can learn from stand-ups and stand-ups can learn from improvisers?
Well, you know, it goes both ways, because improvisers, I believe, are you know, there's two ways to think about it. You know, stand-ups often feel like, oh, these people from the back line can come up and screw me up at any moment. But when you've done improv, you realize sometimes those people on the back line are your lifeline, and you start to, you know, just trust that, you know, I know if I go south here, someone is going to have my back. But in a lot of situations that improvisers, if you get out of the improv scene, you know, if you actually start getting hired to do comedy in other circumstances, you're not going to have that back line. And I think one of the things is just auditioning. You know, if you're an improviser, one of your clearest paths towards success is going to be, you know, going out for Saturday Night Live, going out for The Daily Show, and you're not going to have your team there at all. And these are pivotal moments. You have to do well or this is the end of the line. So if you don't know how to be funny by yourself and you only know how to be funny in a group context, if you spent 3 years with your guiding light being take care of your partner, when you don't have a partner, it's just you up there. You got to take care of yourself. And I think every improviser, even if all they're going to do is go out and do their character as a solo performance, they need to learn how to do that. You know, you got to learn how to do what Andy Daly does, is going out doing character for, you know, 20 minutes of just himself, or learn how to do, you know, what James Adomian does, go out there and be the impression for 20 minutes by yourself. You know, I feel like stand-ups, just as improvisers have way more experience being funny off cuff and being funny in a group, stand-ups have more experience being funny by themselves, and improvisers would do well to learn how to do that. You know, I just feel like in 2016, the comedy world is kind of beyond the idea of specialization, like the idea that you just, the thing I do, you know, you just, the job is really just all around funny person, and you're going to have to be that funny person on every medium and every situation you can be. So you just got to kind of learn how to be funny in any way that's out there, because you're going to need to be.
And a great example of this is Matt Besser. Here's a clip of his new CISO stand-up special, Besser Breaks the Record.
And that's a little odd. So it got me looking at the Ten Commandments again. And I read them. I'm not sure if you guys have read them in a while. But when I read them, I'm like, they're either confusing, obvious, or really vain. That's how I break them down. And most of them just don't apply to us anymore, is my opinion. So what I'm about to do is unveil my new Ten Commandments, okay? Okay. Don't freak out. I know it's freaking a lot of you guys out because you were brought up by the old Ten Commandments. But I'm going to read through the old ones, and you tell me whether they apply to you. I don't think they do anymore. So the old number one, thou shalt not worship any other god but Yahweh. Thou shalt not worship any other. Didn't he come off a little needy, like a needy girlfriend there? Like,
at the party, I saw you talking to Allah last night. Hey, you're laughing at his jokes a little too hard.
So that's too vain, right? Let's forget that. That didn't apply to us. That didn't affect our lives. Let's get rid of that number one. My new number one is don't drive like an asshole.
Yeah, the Ten Commandments bit is actually the one bit that I've done in another special. But I think it got much better after I did that special. But I've done that bit so much since then, it's gotten better and maybe a little more relevant. So I wanted to do it again. And it is the most serious part of a more silly, more abstract, more conceptual kind of shit. A lot of that shit was the stuff I was doing in Chicago when I first started, like the letters to the editor. That's when I was in a more Andy Kaufman kind of phase in my life, whereas the latter stuff might, I don't know, it's just different. It's definitely a greatest hits of my stand-up career, so I'm into different kind of humor. I guess I was brought up on punk rock, wrestling, a lot of stuff where the performer's kind of bragging, there's a lot of bravado, I think that's the best word for it, bravado. Like Johnny Rotten and Hulk Hogan have that thing in common. Mm-hmm. Like, but you don't ever believe, you never, even as a kid, don't really believe that that's who they are. I don't think I was ever that dumb. Like, I just enjoyed the bravado of it. Like, Johnny Rotten's still that way, and he's an old man now. But it's like his shtick, really, and I always enjoyed that shtick. And then Steve Martin kind of, to me, that's what he did as a comedian. He made bravado. He was the idiot who bragged, basically. He was always the smartest, but also, as he's saying he is, he's doing the opposite. He's proving that he's not. And I always thought that was funny. And then Andy Kaufman kind of took that to a bigger extreme of committing to it so hard that some people just didn't even get it. Like when he's back to wrestling, when he's bragging about being able to defeat any woman, so many people thought, that's rude. Like, he's doing a bit, you idiots. And like my record breaking thing, I think some people think, oh God, he really thinks he's breaking comedy records. And even a bit I do in that special, The Impossible Rhyme, where I have a word that doesn't rhyme with anything. I've done that a million times, and there's always someone who believes that I really think I have a word, whereas they're yelling at me like I'm a fucking idiot, and I love that.
In addition to being a comedian and improviser and a movie actor, I am a poet. And as a poet, we have what we call challenge words. They're kind of like mathematicians that have math problems that, you know, like the Good Will Hunting problem, you know what I mean? But we have certain words that are impossible to rhyme, and us poets will get together and try to figure it out. But I cracked it, and I recently found, we have one word. It's called the impossible rhyme, and no one's ever been able to find a rhyme for it, and I'm about to show. Well, first off, what's a word that you've always heard that's impossible to rhyme with?
Orange.
Door hinge. See, I just blew your mind. See, those poets, that's like, you know, it took me years to figure that out, but door hinge. Anyone else want to try? Purple, knurple. Hold on. You know what a knurple is? It's a door hinge for a trap door. So it goes this way instead of that way. Knurple. Those aren't either of the words. No, the challenge word, the word that no one's ever been able to find a rhyme for, is the word moon. Did I hear someone try to rhyme with it? What did you say?
Soon.
Whoa, what? You guys are, I hear a lot of gibberish words. What'd you just say?
Amidst his father's art collection, there was an old acoustic guitar. So I asked Besser if he played. And as someone who's not known for being a musician, I was pleasantly surprised with what came next.
I learned to play guitar doing Walk Hard. They made us learn. Motherfucker. When I was a kid, my parents forced me to take guitar lessons, but I just didn't fucking learn it. Probably because they were forcing me to do it. Trailer park down by the railroad track. Well, that's a burning redneck who was making weed extract. Sons of coal miners and the men who cut the trees, now squeezing marijuana plants of all their THC. Packing PVC pipes with pot heat coils and foil, using flammable solvent to get at that hash oil. Butane ain't got no smell, so a redneck don't know it's there. Best not light that cigarette or you'll set fire to your hair. That's right, them rednecks are on fire, but your vape pen's burning great. Don't worry about them rednecks blowing up, you've got your concentrate. Cannabis oils, butter, wax, and shatter. Rednecks blowing up, but it just don't matter. As long as we use them vaping to get higher, them rednecks blowing up, set themselves on fire.
want to know just how your wax gets made. Just go ask that redneck in the graveyard where he's laid, and he'll tell you. Us rednecks are on fire, but your vaping's burning great. Don't worry about us rednecks blowing up, you've got your concentrate.
That's our show this week. Thank you for listening. Special thanks to Matt Besser.
Listeners, please follow me at Matt Besser on Twitter so I can tell you about things like my podcast, Improv for Humans, or my special Besser Breaks the Record on CISO.com, or the variety show, the UCB Comedy Show.
And special thanks to John Roy.
Yeah, I mean, I have a podcast called Don't Ever Change.
And it's great,
where
by
I
the
interview
way.
Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot. I'm glad you like it. We interviewed comedians about what they were like in high school. And we've had a lot of different people that people might recognize, like Kumail Nanjiani and Dan Harmon, who created Community. We're doing TJ Miller this month. And I think a lot of your listeners might enjoy it. I'm sure we'll try to get Besser on as soon as we can. I think that would be awesome.
Great. And then are you, your Twitter is?
John Roy Comic. It's on Twitter, it's on Instagram, it's on all of that. And also, if people are thinking about doing stand-up, I have a free comedy class that I wrote. It's a 12-week-long program. It assumes that you have open mics that you can get to in your town. But it's available for free on my website, johnroylive.com. So if any improvisers are out there that are interested in taking the plunge and seeing what stand-up's all about, it's free. It's on the internet, and you can just follow along.
So be sure to check that out and check out Matt Besser everywhere he is. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at CISO Show. That's SEESO Show. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks, CISO.